Hey everyone, welcome to Comedy History 101. This is Harmon. Next week we have a brand new episode. It's going to feature our interview with Rick Overton. You might know Rick from a zillion movies he's been in. Most recently he played Mitch on the Showtime series I'm Dying Up Here, which is about the early days of the Comedy Store. So it all ties into comedy history. But this week, we have a special CH101 Select on the history of Abbie Hoffman and the Second City. Yes, the Second City in Chicago, the legendary venue that also has ties to activist Abbie Hoffman. But before we jump into the episode, quick plug, on Thursday, July 22nd, I'll be producing my show, Tale, NYC's Finest Storytelling. It's at 7 p.m. at the wonderful Red Room above the KGB bar. Also, take some time to like, subscribe, and comment on Comedy History 101, wherever you get your podcast, or on our website, comedyhistory101.com. And now, without further ado,
good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
At the defense table,
Abbie Hoffman, Jerry Rubin, Dave Dellinger, Rennie Davis, Lee Weiner, John Froines, Tom Hayden, and Bobby Seale.
These defendants had a plan, and the plan was to incite a riot.
I call this portion of the trial with friends like these.
So I think that last scene, okay, he's supposed to be at Second City.
Oh, is he? Okay, yeah.
So what you heard there was a clip from the trailer of the new Netflix movie, Trial of the Chicago 7, which stars Sacha Baron Cohen as Abbie Hoffman and was written and directed by, of course, Aaron Sorkin. And yes, you've tuned into another episode of
Comedy History 101,
where we school you in what? Comedy.
Comedy.
I am Harmon Leon.
You know, comedy, the key to comedy is Harmon.
Timing?
I already blew the joke.
Or what is the key to comedy with a K? In America with a K, which we experienced in 1968 at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Scott Colonico, co-host.
Man. Ooh, the man. The man.
Yeah, so again, the Trial of Chicago 7 follows the exploits of, well, the Chicago 7, a group of anti-Vietnam War protesters charged with conspiracy and crossing state lines with the intent of inciting riots at the aforementioned 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Scott, you are an impresario of political history. Tell us what you know about the 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago.
Oh, well, Harmon. It wasn't very pretty, let's put it that way. That was the Democratic Convention. That's LBJ had announced just a few short months before the convention that he wasn't going to be running, so it was kind of up in the air. Bobby Kennedy, who was leading the race, had been assassinated just 2 months before the convention, so things were all sticky. It was a sticky wicket in Chicago there, and this was 68. Was about the height of the Vietnam War. I think there were more deaths in 69, but 68 was way up there. Tet had just started that year. Everybody was tired of the war, so the students were showing up in Chicago to make a point about the war. And the students and protesters, everybody just said, this is enough.
And yes, well put, Scott, well put. And for our listeners of Comedy History 101, you're probably thinking at this point, none of this sounds funny.
No, it's not. Watching people get beat by police. It's not, if you've seen the actual tapes of it, not that funny.
Oh yeah, it's horrific. But the comedy tie-in is the Chicago 7 stars Sacha Baron Cohen, who we know as Scott?
Borat, who also, there's another Borat movie coming out.
It came out last night, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow. Okay, I've got some catching up to do.
Yeah, so he plays political activist and anarchist Abby Hoffman, co-founder of the Yippies. And today's episode ties into the parallels between Abby Hoffman, who created a guerrilla-style theater, and his connection in Chicago to the legendary theater Second City.
Yeah, that was interesting because I actually had no idea about this.
Yeah, so anyways, just to go first into the movie Chicago 7, because there are, you know, several actors in the movie that come from comedy film backgrounds. Of course, we have Sacha Baron Cohen, Borat, and we also have Michael Keaton, who, if you've seen the Showtime series on the history of the Comedy Store, Scott, how did Michael Keaton get his start?
Where?
In showbiz.
At the Comedy Store. At the Comedy Store.
Yeah, that's right. Like, not a lot of people know that Michael Keaton started as a
stand-up. Well, he started as a stand-up, but Harmon, before this, I mean, really, if you want to go that far, you know, actually, I know this for some reason, I know this bit of trivia. Michael Keaton worked on the Mr. Rogers Show.
Sorry, I just did a spit take. No, he didn't,
really?
Did he?
Yeah.
So is he from Pittsburgh?
Yeah, he's from that area, and he worked on that. He worked on there as like an intern or something. Like, he wasn't on the show, but like he worked there as an intern or something.
Oh wow! And who directed Night of the Living Dead?
Is it George Romero?
Yeah, he worked on Mr. Rogers as well.
Yeah, man, Mr. Rogers like the breeding ground for comedy and zombies.
Yeah. George Romero got his chops. There's a good George Romero documentary that he got his chops working for Mr. Rogers.
Ah, okay, interesting. Well, that's a whole
podcast in itself. Yeah. I mean, there's limited filming options back in the 60s in Pittsburgh. So Mr. Rogers was one of the go-tos. Yep.
It was like the creative hotspot, yeah.
Yeah, and so lastly, in the comedy lexicon of the cast of Chicago 7, we have, of course, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who got his start on Third Rock from the Sun. Is it Third Rock?
Right. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I watched a couple episodes of that. That was it was all right.
Yeah, so check that film out on Netflix. But let's go more into the real life Abby Hoffman. So who's on trial at the 1968? No, it was actually 1969. Chicago 7.
They went to trial. Yeah. But the events were all from 1968. So on trial were Abby Hoffman, Jerry Rubin, Tom Hayden, Rennie Davis, David Dellinger, Lee Wiener, John Freunes, and Bobby Seale.
Yeah, that's right. And so they were on trial for inciting riots when in reality it was Chicago police who removed their badges and proceeded to beat the shit out of everyone.
Yeah, I think it was they tried to escalate it, but they crossed state lines to incite a riot, which made it a federal offense.
So Scott, again, if you're inside the mind of the listener of Comedy History 101, you're probably thinking, well, when does the funny happen?
Right. When does the funny enter into it?
Okay.
Not, as we already said, not when the police are beating the protesters.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the funny
So,
part,
Scott, no. What do you know about the legendary theater Second City in Chicago and its origins?
I know that we've done an episode on it, haven't we? We have.
Yeah, we did the history of SCTV. So when you think of like old school Second City, you're thinking of like in the early 60s, you're thinking of like guys wearing like, you know, suits and ties doing, you know, crazy, you know, Nichols and May type sketches.
Okay, fair enough. I stand corrected.
But so when 1968 came rolling around, Second City, which was founded by intellectual nerds and squares from University of Chicago, was kind of a little bit out of sync with what was actually going on outside the doors of its own theater.
Yeah, which oddly enough, the doors outside their own theater just happened to be kind of in the middle of downtown Chicago where the convention riots were taking place.
Yeah, so again, Second City as a theater, it's hard to think that they were sort of out of step with comedy. So
What do they do, Scott, to try to become hip and edgy and appeal to the kids? Who do they hire?
Well, Harmon, they hired one of our favorites here at Comedy History 101. They hired none other than Harold Ramis to come in and start writing jokes for them because he had grown up in Chicago and had previously written for Playboy magazine.
Yeah, so and Playboy magazine, as we know, started in Chicago.
Yeah, the very hot, Chicago, the hot spot in the 1960s. You got your Democratic Convention, you've got your Playboy magazine, you got your Second City, Harmon. I smell trouble a-brewing.
Yeah, so again, also, you know, again, out of step with time of the late 60s, Playboy magazine. Because that's sort of your, like, late 50s, early 60s, James Bond, Sean Connery, Dr. No kind of mentality going on. And Harold Ramis was hired as a writer at Playboy. He said, I came to Playboy not because I was a reader or a huge fan, but growing up in Chicago is one of the major publishing empires in the city. And basically, he got hired by Playboy because he is one of two editors that were young, long-haired, and the company could change and evolve to keep up the pace with a new generation.
Yeah, the hipsters.
Yeah, so through his job at Playboy, Ramis auditioned for Michael Miller, who was directing at Second City, and he landed a job with the touring company of Second City, which would perform in Chicago on Monday nights, and they prided themselves as having what kind of jokes, Scott?
Edgy
jokes. So again, it was like this changing of the guard at Second City. You know, the ensemble was wearing like suits and ties, and the women were in dresses. But on Monday nights at Second City, the touring company come in, and they were kind of the long-haired hippie types.
Yeah, they just do like the political humor of the day, drugs, talk about hippies, all the stuff that the kids like.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Yeah, so here's something funny. So Harold Ramis said, I played a lot of weasels, a lot of cowards. Sweating cowards was my thing. I used to play like hippies and counterculture guys. And then John Belushi came in. And he took over those roles, so I moved into the coward role. And
that's a good.
It's
a lateral move.
Yeah, and another big character that Harold Ramis would play at Second City was a character called Specs or the Professor.
Sound familiar?
Yeah, so he played like the brainy guys and stuff. So Scott, Second City's coming in. The protester, it's 1968. How did those two sort of cultures sort of cross paths?
Kind of mix up, you know, like peanut butter and chocolate, Harmon. Yeah, it's kind of like this. Basically, the protesters would be meeting in Lincoln Park in Chicago, and around 11 o'clock each night, the police would move in, push everybody out, and it happened to be that the Second Second City Theater was located right directly across the street from there, meaning that a lot of the actors would be standing out in front of the Second City to see what's going on. They'd see all these police out there pushing all these demonstrators towards their theater. So in many cases, a lot of the Second City people would get caught up in the protests. So the police would start bashing on them as well, the protesters, even though at the time, a lot of the Second City people were all wearing suit and ties and were kind of still the square comedians.
Yeah, so again, it's like the changing of the times, like right after the 1968 convention, Second City shifted gears and they opened up with a new show called A Plague on Both Your Houses, which made an attempt to reflect of what's going on in the city. There was a scene where a Chicago police officer...
Hey, wait. Let's reenact the scene.
Oh, okay.
Let's
all right. So I will set the scene. You can play the part of the... Do you want to play the police officer?
Okay, I'll be the police officer.
Okay, so in the scene, a Chicago police officer was seen beating up a protester. So you can improvise the lines on the police officer.
Okay. Oh, you protester. What are you doing here at our 1968 Democratic Convention?
No. Say things like, you know, get a job, long-haired, smelly, take a bath.
No, dude, I'm like, dude, that's, I'm just saying, why are you in my, why are you breaking down our role play,
man? Oh, sorry. Wait, I'm a reporter.
You're a reporter.
The officer stopped beating him and he took out a gun and he shot the reporter. Kind of very applicable to this day in this era of fake news.
Yeah, but I don't think back at the time the reporter would have told the cop what to say, like what just happened there. We broke the fourth wall.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah. I should have gone to my where. And yes, Dan.
and if there are any improv people listening to us, man, that's, I think we'll both take the blame for that.
Yeah. So the reaction from the audience of the 1968 show was the entire audience got up, tears in their eyes, and their arms went up in peace symbols, like it was a revival. So that was kind of like a shifting of political times
changing of the guard. Yeah. I mean, let's just talk about. So I dug this up. So this is kind of interesting. We did find one.
Oh, this is a great photo you dug up.
Yeah, I couldn't find any video of the performance. We'll put the video up on our webpage. I couldn't find any video of the performance. It's because weird. Cause you think, you know, we had that video of Lemmings, but there's no video of this. Maybe there is somewhere. But I found the alumni for each year. So I just wanted to see. So we're talking about this stuff. So the show started in 68. Let's say it bled through to 69. We'll just mention, so this is the alumni Second City Chicago list of 1969. David Blum, Martin DeMott, Jim Fisher, Joe Flaherty,
yep,
of SCTV fame, Nate Herman, Pamela Hoffman, Roberta McGuire, Judy Morgan, Brian Doyle Murray.
Bill Murray's older brother.
Bill Murray's brother, and also a very good actor as well. And Harold Ramis, Eric Ross, Cyril Tymon, and Paul Taylor. So you had a few.
And did you mention Peter Boyle?
One class. Peter Boyle was actually in 2 years earlier. So in the picture from the show,
Okay, got it.
Yeah, in the photo, he was in the show. He was just an alumni. So like he joined. This is just the year that people joined. So in 67, Peter Boyle joined in 1967.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like everyone, like Brian Doyle Murray, you know, was one of the huge stars at Second City, where people just thought, when Bill came on the scene, was, oh, he just got in because his brother's on in the theater.
Yeah. kind of like Jim Belushi.
Oh, but Jim Belushi, you would go,
Oh, man, did I cross the line?
No. I mean, Jim Belushi. Didn't he do, like, about three movies with a talking dog or something? Police sidekick?
Well, he was in a ton of, like, first run, like sitcoms only lasted like one or two episodes.
Oh,
yeah, he was in a bunch.
And tying into the Chicago 7, one of his first roles was with Michael Keaton in a sitcom, I believe, called Working Stiffs.
The Working Stiffs, that's right, yep. And Michael Keaton in this movie plays the federal prosecutor. He plays Ramsey Clark, the Attorney General of the United States.
Yep, he does indeed. So the reaction, once again, from the Second City show Plague, some of the reactions were it was too angry to be funny. So their next review, they retreated to kind of like a little bit of safer ground. Ramus said that all kinds of problems happened with the touring company that year. Case in point, they performed at West Point, where the long-haired material didn't go down especially well.
Yeah.
How do you see that?
I couldn't imagine that. Boy, what a surprise.
Yeah. What else happened while they were on tour, Scott?
At a show in Louisville, Kentucky, not only is the show received in with a blank stare by the audience, stony silence, as Ramus reports, but he said that somebody threw a glass at the performers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Ramus wrote that the show was flopping in a panic. They just threw together a bunch of jokes he heard at the Playboy Mansion, even writing a country song called "If I'd Known She Was Dead, I Would Never Have Asked Her to Dance."
Yeah, and by then, in 1969, I'm talking about fall of 1969, the cast moved to New York, and Ramus and his pals became all the replacements. They did the hippie things, had long hair, wore bell bottoms, did their kind of political content, and they called their show, they changed the name of the show to Next Generation.
Yeah, which kind of signaled the end of the skinny tie generation of Second City.
Yep, that was the end there. But so they were in there. So that's fall of 69, Harmon, where the Second City people would move on to New York. But let's go back a little bit earlier to back when Hoffman was on trial in Chicago. So this would be going back earlier in 1969.
Yeah, that's right. So Hoffman, as once again, you can see it in the Aaron Sorkin movie, on trial in Chicago. So by day, he was on trial, but at night, where would he hang out at?
Second City.
That's right. So so again, Hoffman was no stranger to performance. He actually was credited for inventing an improvised political guerrilla theater style that was the marriage of absurd humor and disruption of the political system.
Yep, they're sticking it to the man, as they would say back then, back in the day.
Yeah, so one of the things he did in like 1967, he showed up at the New York Stock Exchange and first showered dollar bills on the trading floor and then set fire to a $5 bill. Edgy guerrilla theater. 1968 convention protest. He proposed a pig for president?
Yeah, that was it. I can't remember. They had a name for the pig, and I do not recall it off the top of my head.
Yeah, so again, while he was on trial at night, you know, pretty darn sure that he was being trailed by law enforcement. So instead of like hanging out with his friends from, you know, the legendary activist group, the Chicago or the Weather Underground. Do you know about the Weather Underground?
Yeah, actually, I do, because one of my first films, The King and Dick, about Elvis Nixon, mm-hmm. showed at the Sundance Film Festival in 2003 before a feature-length documentary about the Weather Underground that went on to get nominated for an Oscar. And it's a pretty good documentary if you can find
it. Yeah, I've seen that documentary. Also, I have a friend from San Francisco whose dad was a member of the Weather Underground.
Yeah. Which one was he?
I don't know which one. And I don't know if my friend wants me to say, but they had to go off the grid a lot, as they say.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it was a pretty big group, you know. There was like different levels to it. And always with these groups, there's always sort of like a sex orgy element involved with it as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. So a little bit more on the pigs.
Yeah.
Actually, he has his own Wikipedia entry.
Oh.
His name was Pigasus. Pigasus J. Pig. He was a 145-pound domestic pig nominated as the president of the United States by the Youth International Party in 1968.
Oh, so how did he do in the election?
I don't know. I have to do a little bit more digging, but apparently the pig was also arrested. That's what I'm reading here during the convention. So we'll have to go into that until a little bit deeper. I just keep seeing the pig was arrested. Oh, okay. No, it says arrested in quotes. Okay.
All right.
But yeah. But actually,
did they end up frying him like bacon?
No, I think he kept on living. He lived and retired after that. He was nominated for president in 1968 by the Yippies. They also discussed a Pegasus at the trial of the Chicago Seven. Sorry, excuse me, I was getting ahead of myself there. But yeah, so they Mr. Kunstler was questioning the witnesses about said pig. Apparently, they purchased him from some farmer outside of Chicago. Okay, wait, here's the end. Here's the end of it. Yes, and according to Wikipedia, sources vary on the fate of Pegasus. There is some speculation that a police officer ate him.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
that was... here, ooh, Chicago police in the '60s.
Yeah.
So Scott, let's say you were an audience member at Second City in 1969, during the trial, who might you see on stage in the character of Julie?
Now, Julie, what the Julie was kind of the Julie character was kind of an overbearing authority figure, kind of from the up and standing portion of society, and that character was typically portrayed by Mr. Abbie Hoffman.
Yeah, Abbie Hoffman, who is actually portraying the judge who is conducting the trial by day, Judge Julius J. Hoffman, and at night, on stage at Second City, you could see the judge portrayed by Abbie Hoffman.
Yeah, so that was kind of a weird case of life imitating art. But also, the folks at Second City began thinking that the reason he was hanging out at the club so much, at the theater so much, was to kind of provide himself with an alibi.
An alibi, and also I think he was dating one of the cast members as well.
That's a double reason.
Yeah, just a footnote, because sometimes we drop names. I remember in San Francisco, we talked about this on our episode about Pepe the Frog. There was always an annual holiday party at a place called Last Gas Publishing, where you'd always get like the old school counterculture San Francisco types hanging around. They'd be like Art Crumb's brother and, you know, people like that. And I remember I was hanging with a group and this woman whispered to me and she said, "That guy standing next to us is Abbie Hoffman's son."
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I believe it was America Hoffman.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, that was like, you know, when back in the day in the Austin comedy scene, Michael McKean's brother Joel was part of the local comedy scene, so I've talked to him a couple times.
Yeah, I remember meeting him from my times at the legendary comedy club, the Velveeta Room, now yes, known as the Velve.
The Velve. save it for the episode.
Save it for our episode about the hate of food trucks.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So Scott, any other takeaways from the history of, you could take your pick here, of the 1968 Democratic National Convention, or the 1969 trial of the Chicago Seven, or the early history of Second City transitioning into kind of a more radical, humored take on things, or Abbie Hoffman performing at Second City?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say if you're trying to provide yourself with an alibi, meeting a nice young lady at the time, trying to avoid hanging out with weathermen, always just might as well hang out at Second City.
Yep, and Second City, very interesting history. And also just kind of, I think it's funny to think about that there was a point where Second City comedy was, and using the lingo of the day, was considered, you know, the comedy of the squares.
Yeah, the squares, boo.
And a big reason that it took a different direction had to do with our favorite Ghostbuster, the late, great Harold Ramis.
Yes.
And with that, I think that concludes our history of Abbie Hoffman and Second City. So that means it's time to plug away. Scott, what do you have to plug?
Well, Harmon, really right now, all I'm plugging is my YouTube channel, This is the President, where I post undiscovered bits of presidential audio. One of the last things I just posted up there was a bit of newly found audio of Eartha Kitt and LBJ kind of getting into it. Eartha Kitt, famous at that time as Catwoman, so that's pretty cool. And then also we'll be publishing in the next week or so a nice little bit of footage about Ronald Reagan predicting drone technology in the 1980s, in 1983.
Oh, wow. What would he use that drone technology on?
I don't know. I'm going
to
say...
Would he use it not to mention the AIDS crisis for 4 years of his presidency?
All I can mention is that he compares it to Space Invaders, and Space Invaders was even old by that time.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So that's over on YouTube. This is the President. Sometimes we put podcasts up there, sometimes we don't, so... But go to the YouTube and you'll find all the cool stuff there.
Hear, hear. And for me, a week from today, next Friday, October 30th, 8 p.m. Eastern time, I'll be producing my show, The Muff, a parody show of The Moth. And you can check it out on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/comedyhistory101, who will win The Muff. And with that, thanks a lot for tuning in, and see you next time, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured the audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.